Ready?
What's supposed to happen?
Flashing. Hit the red button. Okay, good. Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you for those who are able to join us on pre-Pesach frenzy. Okay, so the topic today we're going to discuss, Be'ezer Hashem, is the sugya of Lishma of Matzis, where there's been many titles to this shir, went through different progressions, as the matzah goes through different progressions, innovation in matzah, Lishma in matzahs, machine matzahs, hand matzahs. We'll try our best to tape it, to start from the sugya, and try as much as we can to get it down to practical application. So the first question we have to deal with is Pashat, the Ivra Taich, Pashat Taich, how do we explain the word Shmura Matzah? You go to a regular person in the street, and the common vernacular is Shmura Matzah is the hand matzahs, and machine matzahs are machine matzahs. So what does that mean? What does Shmura Matzahs mean? We're going to soon see that that definition is very incorrect. Hand matzah could technically be non-shmura, and machine matzah could technically be shmura, according to some shittas. So how are we going to define what is shmura and where does it come from? So the first is the pasuk in the Torah, the pasuk in source number one, Parshas Bo, we read just a few weeks ago, Ushmartem es ha-matzois, we should guard the matzois, ki be'etzem hayoyim hazeh, because on this very day, ha-yitzesi es tzivoyseichem eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took out the legions, took us out of Mitzrayim, Ushmartem es ha-mazel, darasechem ku'asoyim, so we should guard this day, keep the day of Pesach, the first day of Yontif. So the first three words that we're going to focus on right now, the pasuk is telling us, Ushmartem, to guard the matzois. What does it mean? What does it mean to guard the matzahs? Does it mean to finish product? Once the matzah is completed, come out of the oven, now it's a matzah, right? When you have the raw wheat and the flour and all that thing, it's not matzah yet. So what does it mean, Ushmartem es ha-matzah, you have to guard the matzahs? Obviously, it doesn't just mean like by Shabbos also says, Vishamru b'nei Yisrael ha-Shabbos, you have Shemir Shabbos, right? Obviously, the word Shemir over here and Shemir over there is not going to be the same definition. So let's start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah in the middle of the second parak of Kol Shah of Psachim says, first, the Mishnah discusses various grains, the five grains that can be used for Pesach. We're not going to focus on that right now. And different halachas of it's Maiser, Sheni, Demai, all those things. The end of the Mishnah tells us, where it's underlined, Chalos HaToida, the loaves of bread, which had to be brought with the carbon toida, which although I'm calling them loaves of bread, they were always kosher for Pesach, they were always matzah. Urikike Nazir, and the things that had to be brought together with the Nazir after he finished his Naziris, he has to bring a carbon. So the crackers, the matzah, they had to bring with his carbon as well. Asan la'atzman, if they were made for the carbon, if they're made for the carbon taida or made for the Nazir, ein yotzeben, you cannot fulfill your obligation with them on the first night of Pesach. Because I forgot to emphasize before, what we're going to be discussing, the pasuk u'shmartem es ha-matzah is not talking about, according to Pashup Shat, the matzahs of all 7 days, the matzah we have that we eat the rest of Pesach. We're talking about particularly the when we have a bona fide mitzvah saseh to eat matzah the first, or here in Chutzar, the second night as well. So, although these chalois toida or rekikin nazir have no chash chimutz, they have to be unleavened products as well, nonetheless, we cannot fulfill our obligation with them on the first night of Pesach. However, Asan, the Mishnah continues, Asan Limkar Bashuk, if these products were made to sell in the marketplace, meaning they were made on stipulation that whatever the purchaser purchased them for, he can use them. They're universal, they can be either used for Kabbalah, so they can be used for Pesach, for the Seder. Then you can fill your obligation with them. So here we have a clear Mishnah telling us that if the matzahs are produced, again, there's no chashash chimetz here. We're not concerned that the matzahs that are being produced here for the Kabbalah have any come into contact with water or made, you know, they've been left unattended for any period of time. There's no chashash chimetz, there's no suspect that they became a chametz. Nonetheless, you cannot use them if they're made for a different purpose. If they're made open-ended, so to speak, they're just made for any thing the buyer wants to use it for, then you can fulfill your obligation with them. That's the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, how do we know this? How do we know this halacha that if they're not made specifically for matzah, they're made specifically for karbanos, they're not going to be kosher for the first night of Pesach. So that's in source number three. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us, Menahani Mili, how do we know this halacha to be true? Amar Rabba says, Rabba to Amakra, the Pasuk says, like we said before, Shemartim es ha-matzahs, we have to guard the matzahs. The Gemara makes a drasha, matzah mishtameres l'shem matzah that was guarded for the sake of matzah of Pesach, Yotzetzuzu, it comes to exclude this case of chalois toida and rekikei nazir she'ein mishtameres l'shem matzah, it's not being guarded for the sake of the matzah of mitzvah, elo shum zevach, it's only being guarded for a carbon. So here we have Rabba darshin the pasuk with shmartim es ha-matzahs to teach us the basic halacha of what we're going to now call shmura matzah. We have to have matzah that was mishamer for Pesach and not that was mishamer for a carbon. Rav Yosef happens to be, has another drasha how he gets it. We're not going to focus on Rav Yosef drasha now. The Rambam only quotes Rabbah's halacha as being the source of this halacha. So we're going to focus on Rabbah Ushmartem es hamatzos. Rashi, very crucial Rashi over here says, what does it mean Ushmartem es hamatzos? Avalei, Rashi's gear says, Avalei shmir l'shem matzah. We have to make it a guarding for the sake of matzah. Kol shimur sha'ata mishamra. Every step of the guarding, says Rashi, that's being guarded for matzah shalei tachmes, that should not become chametz, hiskavin l'shem matzah shal mitzvah. So Rashi says every part of the process, starting from the harvesting until all the way up to the baking, all has to be done according to Rashi. Iskav on the shei matzah shal mitzvah. We should have intention that we want to use these matzahs for the mitzvah. Again, we're here particularly talking about for sure the first night of Pesach. We're in Chutzar, it's the second night as well. Again, even though there's no chashash chimutz, we're not concerned that there was anything that happened to this dough that started becoming chametz. Nonetheless, if we don't have the positive aspect of lishma into the matzah, then it's going to be a problem. Okay, let's just digress for a minute. We're going to discuss as we go along now, and I'm trying to emphasize it right now, there's two distinct aspects which are going to, at various points, intermingle and get a little confusing. There's the din of lishma and matzahs that it has to be done for the sake of the mitzvah, just like we have when you write a sefer Torah, it has to be done for the sake of the mitzvah. A person writes a get, it has to be done for the sake of the mitzvah. A person brings a carbon, it has to be done for the sake of this lishma and mitzvahs in general. That's this din now, that we're saying there's a din of lishma in matzahs. There's another halacha, again, which is, at first glance, a little bit different, but that's going to cross over, is the idea that we have to make sure that's kosher for Pesach, that there has not come in contact with any agents that will make it suitable to become a leavened product. Okay, now, the Gemara, on the next source, in source number 4, I cut out part of the Gemara. I really did a little trick over here. The Gemara is really talking about a halacha, which I didn't discuss because we don't do it nowadays. The Rishonim say in Shulchan Aruch Paskin, something called lisisa. Letisa, some type of soaking process they would do after the grain was harvested. After the grain was, now you had the kernels of grain, they would soak it in some warmish type of water. Again, I don't know the exact procedure. Somehow it would help remove the bran and other procedures of it. And then immediately they would go ahead and grind it up, make the flour, make the dough, make the matzahs. So the Gemara had a whole discussion over here on Daf Mem in Pesachim, which I did not quote, whether or not you're allowed to do it or not. The Gemara then is coming off the sheet of Rava. Rava said it's suitable and it's appropriate to do this letisa process, again, the soaking of the grains, because Rava says, the Pasuk says, Ushmartem es hamatzos, we have to guard the matzos. If all that means is just nothing fancy, so then why would I not allow to be Lutisa? He says, Rava's saying that Lutisa is putting a challenge to the people guarding the matzahs, and since we have a positive commandment to guard the matzahs, therefore, says Rava, Lutisa is not a problem, because I'll guard it, I'll make sure, I'll keep my eagle's eye on it, and I'll make sure that no chimutz happens. So now I quoted from the Gemara, Shimur Lamai. The Gemara now asks the question, how do we define Shimur? When is Shimur necessary from? And the Gemara goes through a whole Shakvatari. I don't want to go speak through the whole Gemara. But basically, the Gemara first suggests that maybe it's only from the time of kneading and onwards, because Rav Huna said a very interesting halacha. Rav Huna said that if a person has matzos, or what the Gemara calls it batzekos, some type of crackers from a goy, you can buy them for Pesach, you can eat them on Pesach, as long as you eat a kezias of what we'll call matzah, a kosher matzah we'll call, meaning a matzah that a Jew made for your mitzvah, meaning the fact that a goy made it doesn't make it not kosher for Pesach. Now, we can't be yoy to the mitzvah with it, says Rav Huna, because a guy made it. A Jew has to make it. But you see here, says the Gemara, that the fact that as long as I know that no chametz happened to it, there was some supervision of it later on in the process, that would allow me to eat it on Pesach. So the Gemara says, the Gemara rejects it, and then the Gemara asks on Rav from a different svara. I don't want to get bogged down in the intricacies of Shak Vitaya. The bottom line is that the Gemara says the last three lines, Rava did not change his stance. Rava said, you're allowed to even soak the grain in water and then immediately process it, immediately grind it up. And because the Gemara brings a story, the Amar, two lines in the bottom, the Amar Luhu, Rava said, Lahanu de mahapchi kipi, to these people that would turn over the sheaves of grain in the field, ki mahafichisu hafichu l'shom mitzvah. Make sure when you're turning over the sheaves of the stalks of grain in the field, make sure you're having in mind for the mitzvah. Alma, the Gemara concludes, kasava Rava holds, shimur meikara mitchilasa v'atzaifa be'inon. The Gemara concludes that Rava requires shmira from the time of the beginning of the process, which the Rishonim explain as katsira. So from this Gemara, let's, again, try to speak it out outside, try to sum it up. I don't want to miss any of the main points of the Gemara. The Gemara says, in the middle of discussion of lesisa, whether or not you're allowed to soak the grain in water or not, Rava suggests that you should do it, and it's 100% fine, because then you have the mitzvah of shmatim esamatzes. You can get the mitzvah by carefully watching it from that process. The Gemara gets involved. When would be a suitable time to start that process? The Gemara suggests lisha. Rava doesn't like it. Rava says it has to be even from earlier. You have to start from the beginning of the katsira, from the beginning of the harvesting. You have to make sure that it was guarded. And we see Rava himself would instruct the people working in the fields that even when they just turned over the field, they turned over the stalks of grain as they were whatever harvesting, whatever exactly they were doing in the field, he told them, have kavana. So at the one hand, the Gemara is discussing a chshash of chimutz, a concern that maybe the grains are becoming chametz, and at the end, the Gemara brings in that Rava would tell them to imbue some level of lishma for the sake of the mitzvah while they're already working with the stalk. So, although the Gemara again was discussing a practical concern of chimutz, at the same time, it brought in a less, I don't know how to say it exactly, it's not exactly a physical problem per se, it may be more of a spiritual entity of imbuing the din lishma into the matzahs. That's the Gemara over here seems to be saying. So now, I just wanted to digress for a minute. As long as the stalks are growing in the ground, the halacha is clear that they cannot become chametz. Obviously, it rains all the time. That's how the crops grow. Any vegetation needs rain or irrigation for it to grow. However, once the grain reaches a level of full maturity, that means it's completely dried out, however they have ways of figuring that out, whether just by looking at it, that's how they used to do it, or now they have all types of machinery to determine that, and ways to measure it, then once it's fully mature, even though it's still attached to the ground, it could become chametz, because it doesn't need the ground anymore. Just because it's physically attached to the ground doesn't mean that it can't become chametz. It only can't become chametz as long as it's still in the growing process. And there could be torrential downpours in the early stages of the wheat growing. It doesn't make a difference. That just helps to grow quicker, perhaps, right? It won't make the grain chametz. Only could become chametz if water comes in contact with it after it's fully mature or after it's detached from the ground. If you cut it off before it's fully mature, then it could become chametz if it gets wet at all. Now, before we go further, again, there's a lot of practical details here that I had to teach myself to understand all these different shittas here. Before the invention of the combine machine, which was, I don't know, let's just say for argument's sake, approximately 100 or so years ago, around, for argument's sake, they used to harvest the machine by much more manual labor. There, the Paiskim, the Chai Adam, and the Mishabrua quoted as well, explain, when's this the most opportune, what's the most suitable time to cut the grain? So the Paiskim there, the Chai Adam writes, while still a little bit moist, meaning before it completely dries out. Because once it completely dries out, like we said, you have a problem, because then if it rains, once it's completely mature, then it could become chametz even attached to the ground. So if you cut the wheat when it's only, so to speak, 85-90% mature, then it's no problem. Then you can put it in the storehouse, make sure it doesn't get wet, and you can have a kosher Pesach grain. If you wait till it's 100% mature, then if it rains again, you have a problem, because now you have fully mature grain that became wet, and now you have to check each and every grain, a very tedious process to see if the chimut process started. The Paiskim, the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara, gives us certain details of certain cracks you look for in the grains. It's possible to check it, but it makes the mashkiach's job very, very difficult. So the Paiskim therefore said, before, pre-combine days, they would cut the grain, to say for argument's sake, at approximately 85-90% maturity, in order that they could make sure that they would get it before it be completely mature, they can put it in the storehouses and keep it dry. Now, this is all in Europe, where it rains in the summer, because they use summer wheat for the matzahs. In Eretz Yisrael, where it doesn't rain in the summer, they really don't have this concern. They could wait till the wheat is fully dry and harvest it, because they don't have to be concerned that if they don't cut it right away, there's going to be some rain and the wheat's going to get wet, because in Eretz Yisrael it doesn't rain the whole summer. So they never had this shaila in the grains in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that's the basic backdrop. Fast forward, here we are in 2017. As far as I know, all harvesting in the United States of America is done with a combine machine. It's a fantastic machine. I saw one a couple months ago. I was in a museum in Chicago to have it on display. My kids climbed up on it. It's very fun, great. It saves the farmers a lot of time and effort. Does all the processes in one. It's a great machine. However, the problem with the combine machine is, at least at this stage, we'll get to another problem later, is that it can only work if the grain is fully mature. If the grain is only, let's call it 85-90% mature, it's still a little bit moist, the combine machine will not work properly. It'll break the machine. The whole thing will malfunction, whatever it's going to be. So in order to use the combine, which is what all the farmers want to use, you have to have fully mature grain. in order to satisfy what the Paiskim are saying, in order to avoid any chimutz problem, in America or in Europe, we have to cut the grain before it rains, before it's fully mature, so we don't have to worry about their summer rains. So now what do? Okay, comes along the Satmar Hasidim, okay, and they discover Yuma, Arizona. Yuma, Arizona is a place somewhere, I don't know where, somewhere five hours drive away from Phoenix, where close to California, where it's very desert-like conditions. It doesn't rain in the summer at all. There's basically, come on, most of the year, not even any dew in that time of year. And they said that's similar to the grains of, meaning it's similar to halachically to Eretz Yisrael, that has a that doesn't rain there at all in the summer, so they can use the combine machine there, no problem. Comes along the other Satmar camp and says you can't use the grains there for certain reasons. I don't want to get involved in machlokes right now. And that only certain bakeries get the wheat from Arizona. Most bakeries get their wheat from New Jersey or other places on the East Coast, other wheat fields. They have other ways of avoiding this issue. I'm just bringing it out to the discussion of it's really important to know that this proper hashkacha, and that's one of the responsibilities of the hashkacha agency, to know when the wheat is. That's what we're discussing here. Chashash chimus m'shas ketzira. I'm just, all those past couple minutes, just to bring to forth that there's a genuine concern of exactly when you harvest the grain, because if you get it too early, the combine machine can't cut. If you get it too late, you're worried that it's going to already have gotten rained on in America, where it rains in the summer. So I have all these concerns. That's why it's important to make sure we get Shemir Mishas Ketzira. It's protected from the time of harvesting. Okay, let's go back to the Gemara and try to remember that information, because we'll get back to it as we move along. Okay, so the Gemara tells us that Rava was Machmir for sure for Shemir Mishas Ketzira. Comes along the Rush in Source 5, and he brings a whole Machlekes Rishonim. Again, just to sum it up, the Rush paskins that Rava was being Machmir for himself. Rava was not telling us the halacha that you need Shmur Mishas Ketzira. It's possible, like we said, that you can harvest the grain and look through all the kernels and see. Did it start cracking? They start opening up, they start swelling up, and you'll know they became chametz. If it didn't, you can use it. Rava was being machmer for himself, but according to the Rush, the halacha is you only need Shmura Mishas Lisha from the time it's actually being needed. After then, you need constant people watching it to make sure there's no chametz.
So the definition of shmura at this point is, number one, that it didn't become chametz, and that it was done in the shape of matzah mitzvah?
According, yes and no. This Gemara in source number 4 was not necessarily really talking about the shape of matzah mitzvah. It kind of flew into it at the end, because that's what happened at the end. But like I said, in the beginning, it was discussing only the chashash chametz. Then it made a turn at the end and said also the shame mitzvah.
Right?
So hold that thought for a minute. But again, in the Rush, the Rush himself paskins that only thing that you need is Shemura to make sure it doesn't become from the Shas Lisha. Shas Ketzira, according to the Rush, is only Rava was being Machmir. Then the Rush adds that, however, the custom in Ashkenaz, in Germany and France in his day, this is the bottom of the right column of the Rush that goes into the top of the left column, is they watch it from the Shas Techina, not from the Shas Lisha, not from the time of kneading the dough, from the time of milling it, or when they ground up. Why? It says, because in his days already, in the times of Rishayim, they had invented hydropower mills. Hydropower mills means it's working by water power, which is next to some body of water. Once you're ready, so you cut the grain and you protected it, but now you're bringing it close to the water. That's really dangerous. Therefore, in times of Rishayim already, the Rush says, they were careful not just Mishas Lisha from the time of kneading, but even Mishas Techina to make sure it would stay away from the water. Excuse me, that's the Rush. However, the Rush says the Rif paskins that Rava was not just being mach for himself. Rava is telling us the halacha, and according to the Rif, the halacha is you need shmur mishas ketzira. Again, this is only for the matzahs that are going to be used for the mitzvah, which is seder night matzahs. Doesn't mean the first day matzahs, doesn't mean the second day matzahs. It means any seder matzahs, first night and second night. That's when we need the extra careful guarding. The extra careful guarding, according to the Rif, must be from Mishas Ketzira. According to the Rush, could be technically Mishas Lisha. But he says right in his day, the meaning was to do it from the time of the Techina, the time of the grinding of the wheat, because they would use a water-powered mill. Now, then the Rush, in the middle of the left column, quotes a She'iltis and says another halacha, which we're familiar with, that all the processes, starting from any time it gets near the water, so that could either be the mill time, because that's what they used to mill the grain by the water mill or by the time of kneading, if you don't use a water mill, must be done by a Yisrael Gadol. Could be a woman or could be a man, but it has to be, it can't be a Cheres Shaitiv Katan or a guy, because now, says the Shiltus, we need Lishma L'Shem Mitzvah. And that can only be done by someone who's obligated. So it has to be a boy, a man, or a woman over the age of Bar Bas Mitzvah who's obligated in matzah. A guy, a cheresh, a shaita, a katan cannot do the lishma, just like they can't make lishma for Sefer Torah, they can't make lishma for any other mitzvah. Says the Shiltus, they can't make lishma in matzahs. But the Shiltus is saying that's only necessary in a later stage when you're actually making in matzahs. Because, according to the Shiltus, presumably the way I'm understanding it, is that harvesting the wheat is, and grinding the wheat, if you're not using a water mill at least, is all just preparatory. That flour can technically go anywhere. That's not matzahs yet. What makes something matzah is when you have the recipe. When you start the recipe is in the kneading process. When you're mixing the right measure of flour with the right measure of water, that's matzahs. When you start making matzahs, really, which is again, when you're getting down to the mixing ingredients together, that needs the act of lishma like we're familiar with in other mitzvahs. That's what we're holding so far. Comes along the Shulchan Aruch. Again, this is all, every stage of it was really Machlekes Rishayim. We're cutting it just to get to as the most concise way possible that I was able to do. The Shulchan Aruch in Simen Tuf Nun Gimel Sif Dalet Paskins that L'chatchilo we should go like the Rif. He says, Achitim Sh'aisim Be'a Matzis Mitzvah, the Chitah that we're making for Matzis of the Mitzvah, Toiv l'shamron, it's best to wash them, shlo yiplu aleihem mayim mishas ketzira. They should not have any water on them from right at the time it was harvested. Ulepachos mishas techina, or at least from the time of grinding. Ubishas hatchak, the Shulchan Aruch says you can even take flour from the marketplace. Just to focus on the last thing for a minute, this halacha that you can even take flour from the marketplace, all the paiskim say doesn't apply to our flour. It's ready in a couple hundred years ago, it's already a problem, but all the more so today, where they process the flour, they bleach it, they do all types of things to it, and that, therefore, for sure, according to all Paiskim, you cannot just go into your local supermarket, buy a bag of gold medal flour, and use that for matzahs. That would for sure be a problem. But okay, the Shulchan Aruch is passing best to use shmura mishas ketzira. The second best is to use shmura mishas techina. We explained the reason why techina came in, the grinding that became a factor. That's not medina de gemara. That's medina de rishayim. That practically they would use a water powered mill. And therefore, the mishabura paskins, if using a non water powered mill, whether using a hand crank mill or using some other crushing mechanism or using electric mill, whatever it's being used, I don't know what they use exactly nowadays, but that says the Mishabruah, that would not be necessarily a concern because it's not coming in contact with any water there. The only reason why techina grinding came up for the discussion was only because practically that's the, in times of the Rishonim, that's what they used to use, a hydro-powered mill. Okay, yeah.
The riff,
lechatzchila. Lechatzchila is pasach, right, pasach like the riff, right. Comes along the Pri Chadash, the back of the Shulchan Aruch, 1700s approximately. Pri Chadash paskins that it's not in the source sheets. The Pri Chadash paskins that the Shulchan Aruch is being too mekel. Shulchan Aruch is being too lenient. The Rif was not standing by himself. He has a whole list of many Rishayim hold like the Rif. The Be'alacha brings this down as well, and therefore the Pri Chadash paskins even stronger than the Shulchan Aruch, and according to the Pri Chadash, I know the Sfaradim, you have to ask what they do, I don't know exactly, but according to the Pri Chadash, it's le'ikuva, it's ma'akev Pesach night by the Seder, you must eat shmura matzah mishas kitzira. For the rest of Pesach, it suffices, you can have later on, you can get it from either Tchina or from Lisha, but according to the Pri Chadash, if you take the Pri Chadash to the extreme, he says you can't even make a bracha on alachilas matzah. You can make hamayitz lechem in arts, but according to the Pri Chadash, you can't even make an alachilas matzah on matzah that was not shmur mishas kitzira at the Seder night. According to the Pri Chadash, the Be'er Halacha says that it's appropriate to be machmir like the Pri Chadash, but he says, of course, b'di'eved, a person could, he won't go to the extreme of the Pri Chadash and say you can't make an alachilas matzah. He says we could pass like the Shulchan Aruch, and okay, so a person's in a situation where he cannot get shemur mishas ketzira, he's allowed to make the still the brach of alachilas matzah even on regular matzah. So again, we have the Shulchan Aruch passing the Chatzchila like the Rif. The Pri Chadash says it's not only the Chatzchila, it's Ma'akev. And the Be'er Halacha is telling us no, and we can still pass him enough like the Shulchan Aruch that, of course, the Chatzchila, we should do what we can to get Shmur Mishas Ketzira. But if a person doesn't have it, for whatever reason, he could use other matzahs as long as no Chashash Chimas.
So Costco matzah.
We'll get to a practical. I don't know. I'm not responsible for every company. No, I'm going to speak about it in a minute. Yeah. We're going to generalize the different things.
How do you know?
It's a good question. Right. What is it? Hold on. But now let's just get All the Achronim are very busy here. There's a big problem. The Taz deals with it, the Chassam Sofer and Shuvas deals with this. We keep talking about, again, the two aspects. There's guarding it from Chametz, and there's guarding it for the sake of the Matzah. And they're kind of getting a little mishkababbled exactly how we clearly define them. The way the Chassam Sofer lays it down, he says, I don't understand. We're all machmir, says the Chassam Sofer, that from the time in the matzah bakeries and all the processes, we're all doing the Shei Matzah Mitzvah. Everyone's doing the Shei Matzah Mitzvah. But then, and why? Because like we said, like the Shilta said, that's why the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you have to have a bona fide Jew, either a man or a woman, who's Bar Bas Mitzvah, involved in the process. They have to do the Shei Mitzvah. But he says, why? When we do the Ketzira, when we're doing the harvesting, when we're doing the grinding, having some guy do it, and some Mashkiach, so to speak, is just watching over him and telling him, okay, make sure there's no Chometz press happens. Why aren't we Makbit, says the Chassam Sofer? And others ask this question as well, that every part of the process should be done by a Jew. Let the Jew get down and dirty, take the sickle and start cutting the wheat. Let him do the mill or grind it by hand, whatever it's going to be. Let's get involved and sweat. The Rush himself used to be very occupied, the Shulchan brings this down, and he would sweat real hard backing, breaking labor when he get involved in the mitzvah. So why are we all getting involved, or at least Jews getting involved in each part of the process? That's the Chassam Sofer's question, and many deal with this as well. The way the Ma'ad Muzmanim, which is in Surah 7 of Sternbuch Shlit, the way he poses the question, says, I don't understand. Is it chametz or is it not chametz? If it's not chametz, let it be kosher. If it is chametz, let it not be kosher for the whole Pesach. I mean, we shouldn't have a higher standard of kashrus the first day of Pesach and have a lower standard of kashrus the rest of Pesach. What's going on? So the way I'm just going to speak out now, one mahalach from Moshe Sternbuch and the name Briska Rav. There are many other mahalachim to answer this question, and I invite you all in the next week or so before Pesach or any time to look around at all the achrayim who deal with this. But the way the Briska Rav explained it was as follows. And basically, I'm understanding this is in source number 7 from Moshe Sternbuch Shlita. The Chazal told us, based on Gemaras, and how it's codified in Shulchan Aruch, there are specific simonim that we need that we can look for and determine if the wheat already became fully mature and if there's any chashas of any concern that it started becoming chametz even after it's harvested. Now that you have the grains of wheat, it's milled, it's turning into flour. We have each step of the process. We have various simonim we can look for, and we can tell very simply: is this chametz? Is the chametz process start yet, or is not process? Is not start yet? And that, of course, is necessary for every single day of Pesach. We cannot chas v'shalom eat chametz any day of Pesach. Doesn't make a difference if it's the first day or second day. However, says the Briska Rav, this is in the second paragraph. However, he's medayik. The pasuk says ushmartem es hamatzis. We have to guard the matzis. Why the Torah use the lashon ushmartem to guard? Why did the Torah just tell us, make matzahs that are kosher for Pesach? Make matzahs that don't have any chametz. What's the ushmartem? Says the Briska Rav that we have a new mitzvah here, that each and every process of making of the matzah, there's a kiyum of the mitzvah in every single part of the process. Rakia mitzvah say, he says, I'm reading the middle of the left paragraph. The kiyum of the mitzvah, shatayra stoma, when the Torah says, ushmartem, v'chol ma sha'oisek u'medaktik b'shmira, every aspect that we're able to be medaktik in it, mekaimas and mitzvah say, we're getting a higher level of the mitzvah, v'hamatzais mehudarin tfei, and it makes the matzais more mehudar because we're fulfilling the Torah on even a higher level. The Lachain Nira says, Moshe Sternbuch, according to Briska Rav, she'im l'dugma b'yde chita achar chita, if a person would spend at the time, which is a very tedious process, and check over kernel after kernel of grain, mimutzumachin, from when it is sprouted. And he says in parentheses here, Kim bin Haga is that like the Briska Rav's minig was, he would go down to the fields, help in the harvesting, and check each and every kernel to make sure that it didn't sprout, that nothing, the chimas pass didn't start again. I don't know how long it took, but it took hours and hours of the Briska Rav's time. He could have been busy doing many other things and learning much more, but he spent all that time. Umedaktik bitachina, and he was exacting in the milling process as well. Umarbe bitikdukim, belisha vafia. All these are fulfilling the mitzvah of Shmartem es HaMatzah. So again, the way the Briska Rav is explaining the mitzvah is that there's the baseline mitzvah. The baseline mitzvah is to make sure we have matzahs that are not chametz at all, and that we can fulfill. If there's a mashkiach checking when the wheat comes in, or the kernels come in right to the factory before it's turned into flour and they're grinding, he says they're all good, they're all good. But if you want to know, you want to get extra credit, so to speak, you want to get a bigger mitzvah, that's the Torah telling us, ushmartem es hamatzos. We have to stand guard already from the beginning, and that's a higher level of mitzvah. There's a tshuva from the Sholem Meshiv, which is going to be a little ironic as we go along in a minute, but the Sholem Meshiv has a similar idea. And the Sholem Meshiv was a big rav in Lvov and Lemberg in the mid-1800s. He wrote probably the most tshuvas of any contemporary Paisik. He has over 15, approximately 15 volumes of Truvas, the condensed and teeny print that even a magnifying glass still keeps it small. The Shalmeshiv writes that the dinu shmartam es hamatzos is we have to be a guard over the matzah. If you hire a guard and he only watches it most of the time, and listen, you hire a guy for 24-hour guard service, right? He watches the building 23 hours and 59 minutes of the day. It happened to me for the 1 minute a day that he fell asleep, the building was robbed. So he'll tell you what I mean. I'll pee roiv the majority of the day. I did my service, right? You gotta pay me. Roiv, you go, Torah always goes, I'll pee roiv. So I'll pee roiv. I did my service. What are you gonna tell the guy? Go jump in the lake. You're not a guard. A guard means you have to be vigilant 24/7, right? Shalmeshu says that's the same concept by matzahs. Ushmartan as a matzahs requires a tremendous level of shimur if you want to get it to the fullest extreme. The Biskrov is saying a similar idea that there's a mahadrin in it that we can get level after level. Again, for the baseline mitzvah of matzahs of Lala Seder, we have the Shulchan Aruch paskening for us that lachatchila we should have shmur mishas ketzira. We have the Shulchan Aruch telling us that if you have only mishas techina, it's sufficient from the time of grinding. We have this idea, the Biskrov is explaining what avada, all the matzahs are not chametz, says the Biskrov. We're not allowing chametz any time of Pesach, but there's an extra level of hiddur in the matzahs if they're guarded from the onset to make sure that we know that there was no lack in the guarding. That's the basic backdrop in a quick nutshell, the past couple of minutes, however long it took, of shmirah of guarding the matzahs properly. Now comes a big discussion of what happened in 1838. 1838, there was a fine Jew by the name of Isaac Singer who decided that Jews are working too hard before Pesach. It's getting too complicated. This whole matzah business of making all the matzah is getting very hard. He was mechanically inclined. I don't know the whole history of him, but he decided that he can invent a machine that's going to help everybody. Keep in mind that, I don't know exactly at one point this happened, but for most of the centuries, when Jews made matzahs, everyone made in their own house. There was not a mass production of a huge bakery sending out all across Europe, all across Eretz Israel. Maybe people had small groups, they did a couple of people, neighbors did it together, whatever it was, but primarily the Rush already speaks about this, and this was the prevalent custom in Europe for most of the time until closer sometime in the 1800s, where Jews really, everyone just went to the wheat field, whatever it was. The Rav maybe, you know, supervised the basic harvesting. I don't know all the details, but for the most part, matzahs were done at home. So every housewife and houseman, whoever was able to pitch in, would get involved in actually rolling up their sleeves and making the matzahs. It was a very hard process. It wasn't just like a regular challah for regular Shabbos. There's a lot more details, as we know. Comes along Isaac Singer and says, I'm going to invent a machine. He invents a machine in 1838. Now, this machine obviously was pre-electricity. It was very mechanical, a lot of gears and things were turning and all types of stuff. Still a lot of human intervention in the machine. And his machine only started after the dough was kneaded. So you still had the human effort of kneading the dough, the human hands were still kneading the dough, but the rolling and the smoothing out and the holes and all that and feeding it into the oven, that was starting to be done mechanically. And for a couple of years, this went off without a hitch. He got the local Rabbanim to approve him. Most importantly, the big Rav that supported him at the time was the Shalom Meshiv, like we quoted him before. He was very pro this idea, and he felt that this was going to save a lot of people extra distress, and there were a lot of problems in that it was hard to find people that were really capable of rolling out the dough properly and making sure that it was done within the allotted time of 18 minutes, and he felt this was going to save a michshol, a great stumbling block for many people who he felt might be eating some level of chashash of chametz on Pesach because they couldn't make the matzahs properly, make it more uniform, make machines. Again, even the machines in his day were more mechanical, and number two, were very local. There was no mass production going across Europe. It was very, for the small couple of cities, wherever it was, the shtetlach that were around, they had these matzahs. This went on for maybe 10, 15, 20 years or so, relatively accepted by Rabbanim in Germany and Western Europe. Eventually, somebody, I don't know who, starts spraying these machines to Eastern Europe and to Galicia and to Romania and to Hungary, and then it really got lebedik. Because for the most part, the way we're going to break it up is that it was basically the Hasidim versus the non-Hasidim. And the Hasidim were led by a Rav who was not necessarily very Hasidish, but the Hasidim took him on, Rav Shlomo Kluger. Shlomo Kluger was the Rav in Brody, a tremendous Pesach, also wrote many, many Chashuv Svarim. He heard about these machines and he was livid. This is out of control. And this started a whole war. On the one side, many Rabbanim started with Rav Shlomo Kluger, and they wrote a whole sefer called Moedah al Beis Yisrael, a proclamation for the house of the Jewish people, signed by many tens and tens of Rabbanim who asked Bishin Matzah, And to counter that, there was a kuntras put out by the Shalomation, Rav Yosef Shalnatanson, and the Rabban who supported him, all about why it's the best thing ever that happened to humanity that we have machine matzahs. And this is a big feud. Just to sum up, the basic machlokes between machine matzah and hand matzah, I didn't write this down because this would take about 50 pages of tshuvas of all back and forth. I'm just going to sum it up into five basic points of what was the problem with machine matzahs, at least for sure in the beginning. Number one, the Shlomo Kluger and those who went with him paskind that it's impossible to properly clean the machines. There's so many nooks and crannies and so many crevices in these mechanical machines. He felt it was impossible to properly clean them, so you have a real chashash of chametz. It's going to be a real concern that there's going to be dough stuck in various parts of the machine, and therefore he said that's reason number one why it's real chametz. Number two, he said, the Rabbanim said, that you can't have lishma. A machine doesn't have lishma. A machine works because there are gears and it's turning, however it's being powered. Whether it's by coal, by steam, by water, by electricity, there's no lishma in machines, these Rabbanim said, and you're losing out the whole idea of you have to have l'shei matzis mitzvah. Number three, they said that since there's eventually the machines actually even start kneading the dough and doing much more, you cannot ascertain if it's properly kneaded. Maybe there are some kernels of wheat that were not milled properly and they were not kneaded improperly. When you have human hands, you can see there's much more here. Everything's in the machine. It's much harder to check. Again, there was a real chash that there was some wheat kernels maybe still stuck into the matzah. Number four, they said that by using a machine matzah, people can lose out the opportunity. People love making matzah, the chavivas hamitzvah, excitement for Pesach, and everyone just goes to the supermarket 5 minutes before Pesach, buys a box of matzahs. You're losing the whole excitement for Pesach. And number five, they said, economically, it's not good because many people who would rent themselves out before Pesach, many women or widows and orphans who needed extra money before Pesach, they would be the rollers and they would make matzahs for people. And now you take away their parnasa. Everything's becoming industrialized, being done in some factory. People are losing out. Furthermore, said Rav Shlomo Kluger, this was amazing. He said, it's not fair. First, we take away people's parnasa. Second of all, you're charging them more money. Machine matzah is so expensive, says Rav Shlomo Kluger. How are people going to be able to afford machine matzahs? Hand matzahs are much cheaper, says Rav Shlomo Kluger. Now, something obviously changed drastically in the past 150 years about that. But at least originally, he said, economically, halachically, sociologically, all types of reasons, the poskim, at least in Eastern Europe, were very much against these matzahs. Now, for each one of these tainas, obviously there are valid halachic responses, and we're not going to discuss all those responses now. But this was a big debate, and for the most part, it basically split apart the camps of the Hasidim and the Misnagdim. Not exclusively, because there are certain Hasidim, or people who are more knighted towards Hasidus, or Hasidish Rabban, for example, the Ksav Sofer, who was accepted by many Hasidish Paiskim, he wasn't Hasidish necessarily, but he was very involved in the Hasidic camp. He said in his shtot, in his town, he was stuck, he had to accept machine masses because he said he couldn't find proper workers that knew what they were doing. And they were really concerned. They weren't rolling out the dough properly. And he felt, even though his father would not have been in favor of machine matzahs, the Ksav Sofer, the son of the Chassam Sofer, he says in his city, he did allow the machine matzahs. Now, not all of the Vishur Rabbanim accepted the machine matzahs, but for the most part, it was basically Chassidim versus the non-Chassidim. This carried out that brought down the truth from Avinezer. Avinezer, who was a little bit after the original Machlokes, but the Machlokes continued for decades, writes to a certain shtut that there was a shtut that the Rav of that town, I don't know if it was a Chassidish or Litvish town, I don't know, they told the town that for this Pesach, no one's allowed to buy machine matzahs. They're all chametz. And the town, the people, the oilam was livid at the Rav, and they fired the Rav. Avinezer finds out about it, sends them a letter to the shtut and tells them, you better hire back this Rav. He's 100% right. The matzahs are chametz. The Chlusha Rim said the matzahs are chametz. The Rechaim, the Santa Rebbe, all the Gedolei, he quotes from all the Rabbanim, all the Chassidish Rabbanim, said the matzahs are chametz. You better hire back this Rav. You can't do this. The town's not allowed to do this. A postscript to this story, I don't know if it's the same story or a similar story because I don't know how to connect the dots, but there's a letter from the Shemi Shmuel. Shemi Shmuel was the son of the Avinezer. And he writes that there was a certain town that the Rav went against, or some of the people in the town went against a letter of the Avinezer, and they allowed machine matzahs. The Avinezer said, you can't allow them. And that year, the person who led that fight, being pro the machine matzahs, died that year before Shavuos. That's what Shemi Shmuel writes. So this was, as you see, this is a very heated debate in Europe. On the flip side, okay, let's get pro-machine matzahs for a minute, right? Many Litvish Rabbanim embraced them. Rav Chaim Oizer himself, the Rav of Vilna, used machine matzahs for the Seder. We know in Yerushalayim, many of the Yerushalayim and Tzadikim use machine matzahs and they prefer it. They hold that it takes away any possibility of human error. It rolls it out much better. It could technically go much quicker if the machines are adequately made and everything. And they say that machine matzahs are better. And there's a story to the opposite extreme that Rav David Maharan, one of the Yushalmi Tzadikim, was known to want to be big promoters of machine matzahs. And some of the people who wanted to argue with him tried to be a little chutzpahdik. And they sent Matzei Pesach, one of the Rabbanim sent his older son to Rav David Maharan's house, Matzei Pesach, and said, "My father said, now that Pesach is over, he would like some chametz. Do you have any machine matzahs my father can have now?" And Abdullah Baran was very polite and gave the kid some machine matzahs, unfortunately, the story was that the next morning this child was nifter. And Abdullah Baran went to Levaya and he was masked, but it was a very tragic event. But I'm just trying to bring out from these stories that this is a machamta shel Torah, and for us to get involved and start picking sides is really not up to us. We, of course, go basa das Torah. But just to keep in mind that not all machine matzahs are created equal. So time doesn't allow to go through over it, but as we know, there's what we call chabura machine matzahs, 18-minute machine matzahs, regular machine matzahs. So I sent a letter, an email to the OU this week just to clarify for me what all the differences are. So basically, when you buy a standard box of Manischewitz Passover matzahs, doesn't say chabur, doesn't say 18 minutes, what that is as follows. The wheat is only guarded mishas techina from the time of milling. It's not shmur mishas ketzira. So you're missing out the mila of the Shulchan Aruch, and the Pri Chodesh holds it's Ma'akev, and the Bar Halacha says we should go with that. They don't stop the machines. The machines are continuously running the whole day. The only thing they clean out are the mixing bowls. The mixing bowls are cleaned at every 18 minutes, but the machines are running, so to speak, on autopilot and constantly flattening and puncturing the matzahs. The way the OU wrote it to me, they said, is that any teeny crumbs of dough that might separate from an earlier dough will almost certainly get mixed into one of the subsequent doughs which immediately follow. Since it takes 18 minutes for dough to become chametz, the assumption is that all crumbs will get mixed back in and will be baked before 18 minutes. So they're relying on a certain presumption, an assumption that even a little piece of dough that fall off will get quickly picked back up. You know, you look, you can go on the internet and see there's a video of Manischewitz Matzah Bakery, the amazing machinery they have and how they do it. You know, obviously they perfected the machine a lot better than it was 150 years ago, but that's how the regular Manischewitz matzahs are done. Chabura matzahs, which primarily come from Eretz Yisrael, not only from Eretz Yisrael, but primarily the Mahadra machine matzahs, those are shamor, those are guarded, mishas ktsiro, so you have the maila of that, the wheat there has the extra hiddur of shamor. But again, there are many places who reject those matzahs, not necessarily because of the kasher shabai, but because of the whole question of whether or not a machine could make lishma or not. And that's a whole discussion unto itself, a whole shaila, if by me just pushing the button, pressing go, and now it's going to go for the next 10 hours or whatever it is, for the next 18 minutes, however long it's going to go, could that imbue lishma into the matzahs or not? And I don't have time to go through that whole machloikis. But okay, again, the chassidim did not accept it, and the litvisha did accept it. Each one has valid halachic basis. Just to end off with two more short ideas, the Kaf HaChaim in source number 8, and other, this is a lot, I think in America a lot of people go with this, is that Kaf HaChaim says that he was hesitant to accept machine matzahs, but he says, at least for the Seder, you should make sure to have avodas yad, make sure to have all the hidurim of having a proper handmade matzah. He says, for the rest of Pesach, he says, those places that have the custom, as long as it's proper supervision, can rely on it. A very interesting reading, I don't have time to speak it out, in source number 9 is a tshuva from Ari Assad, where he explains he was a Hungarian Rav. Obviously, he was very pro-hand matzah, very against machine matzah. He goes on to a whole discussion, not really in regular halacha, maybe a little more meta halacha, where what all the milas are having round over square matzahs. Why round has certain halachic, machshavadika reasons why round matzahs have various milas over square matzah. Just to end off with one machshava about matzah in general, whichever matzah we're going to eat, like we said, the pasuk says actually in this week's parsha, in Parshas Tzav, when it's discussing the carbon mincha, like we said, the kabbanas had matzah come along with it. The pasuk says this week's parsha, in Parshas Tzav, matzah is te'ocha b'makom kailosh, we should eat the matzahs of the carbon in a holy place in the Beis HaMikdash. B'chatzar oil moed achluah, they had to be eaten specifically, like we know, kabbanas had to be eaten by the Beis HaMikdash. So this pasuk is specifically talking about the kabbanas and the matzahs that come with the carbon mincha. However, excuse me, the Radomsky Rebbe in the Sefer Tferes Shlomo writes that al pi derech chassidus we could say the pasuk matzis teyachal makum kardosh is not only referring to the place where we eat the matzis of the karbonis, rather it could refer to the matzis that we eat on Pesach as well. A person has to prepare himself before Pesach l'kadosh l'taras asma, to sanctify himself and purify himself, that we should be a suitable vessel to eat the matzis itself. Not only us physically, but the place where we're going to be, wherever our seder is going to be, in our own homes or in the homes of somebody else, to make sure that place is suitable for kedusha to reign, because the lala seder, as we know, is an exalted night. A night where all we're laharis etzatzma, or liras etzatzma, we're showing ourselves and our families of how we're leaving Mitzrayim. And we have that, according to the Radomsko, we're having that kiyum of we can be b'chatzar oil moed, we can eat our matzahs mamish in the Beis HaMikdash. We know the Chassam Sofer and Shuvis writes that matzah is a very special mitzvah, and that it's the only mitzvah we have today that we make a specific bracha before we eat it. Asher kidshanu mitzvahs mitzvanu al achila, something, right? In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, there were many other mitzvahs that we had to eat specific foods, the kabbalas, etc. The one mitzvah a year that we still have left now in Golos that we can make a bracha on before we eat it is only matzah of mitzvah. Just to, I saw Gvald Gvar yesterday, I was learning with Rip Scott, I saw a great vart from the Haggadah, Halakach Valivu from Ravam Shur, he brought, Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says, in Sefer Bamidbar, where it goes through the Mishpachos, where it's going through all the Mishpachos from each Shevet and giving through all the Nasiim, the Pasuk there says, in Shevet Yisachar, it says, Lefuva Mishpachas HaPuni, the family of Puva, and for the family of Puni. And the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh has a lot of questions over there in the grammatical understanding why it went from Puva to Puni, but he says there, B'toich Dvarov, that we're talking about Shevet Yisachar here, and he says this comes to represent us that the mouths of Loim De Torah, people who are learning them or occupying their mouths in Torah, they have a halacha, they have a din of a kli sharis. Asher yishar subam b'kodesh. Ki ein kedusha kedushas ha-Tayra ha-pen niskadesh, says the Aruch Chaim, our mouths become sanctified through the fact that they are emitting Tayra and we're learning Tayra. And with that, says Ravam Shur, we want our matzah to be b'makom kadosh. Where's the makom kadosh? How's it going to penetrate? How's it going to be b'tayrascha b'tayichamei? How are we going to get the Tayra into us? The matzah, we have to make sure we're putting into a proper conduit. We have to make sure our mouths are, so to speak, kosher l'pesach. It doesn't mean we have to blow torch our mouths, but it means we have to make sure our mouths are properly putting in, but first we have to make sure what's coming out of our mouth is a proper receptacle. We have to make sure we're putting forth proper Torah. Our mouth, the words of Aruch Chaim HaKadosh is that our mouth is a kli sharis. So avada, whichever matzah we're going to be eating, we should all be zayche, like the Zohar says, that matzah is matzah demnusa, matzah dasvasa. Matzah has an aspect of refuah, matzah has an aspect of emuna. We should all be zayche this year to eat Karban Pesach properly in Yerushalayim, Erech Kodesh,
Meir Mimim.
Let me turn this off.
See, this is the Shmuel.